Hi, David Kral. Kral is pronounced perfectly. Kral?
Yeah, it's very close to the pronunciation.
Go ahead. What's the perfect
it's
pronunciation?
David
Kral.
Kral. Yeah,
David Kral.
But it's very close.
Kral. Mm-hmm. Okay. And David is important because your colleague Daniel Katz, you know Daniel still?
Yeah, I still know Daniel.
Okay. He complained that I never introduce my guests with the first name, so we fixed this right now. Yeah. So he's happy now.
Yeah, I told him that you did it because of him, and he was thrilled that he has such an impact.
Thrilled, okay, because greetings to him. I didn't meet him at Java One. Last year I did, mm-hmm. but this year he was not there, I think, or at least I didn't meet him. So greetings. Now, we met because you worked on a very secret technology called JSON.
Oh, yeah, very
right?
secret one. Yeah.
And you made it faster, right?
Right. Yeah. We were developing our own binding framework or version of it. It's just a variation of already existing tools, right? But we were doing it for our Helidon declarative. And our Helidon declarative feature is pretty much its signature move is or signature feature is that it's compile time and pre-generated at the compilation time. All of the binding things. And I don't mean just the JSON stuff, but also the web server and the routing and pretty much everything of this sort is done during the compilation time. And we needed some framework for JSON binding, which would be able to do that, which would be able to prepare for us all the deserializers, right, and serializers at the compilation time, and we wanted to have it nicely wired to the whole Helidon ecosystem and for it to follow our standards, and that's what I've been working on for quite some time because, firstly, it was just my pet project. But then it moved to a full Helidon feature.
Mm-hmm. So we can summarize for the podcast that Helidon is a collection of pet projects, right?
Oh. Sometimes I'm having exactly this feeling that we basically start some library.
You were serious for a second. You froze. This was interesting.
I actually like this summarization because I spoke about it with Thomas Langer some time ago, and we were talking about mm-hmm. that exactly this that we are working on some improvements on our free time because we have an idea and we want to test something and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And suddenly we realize, hey, but this is really useful. We can use that. And suddenly it's not a pet project anymore, but a full feature. And so it's exactly as you said it, pretty much.
Cool. But the compile time, how to call it, configuration or wiring, it's mm-hmm. similar to Micronaut? Or you are aware of Micronaut?
Well, yeah. The way we do it is we use annotation processor, and as far as I remember, Micronaut is doing the same thing, right? That they are pretty much generating mm-hmm. these binding or converter mm-hmm. classes during the compilation time. So I think it's very similar in this regard. Mm-hmm. We just generate the concrete sources, the Java sources mm-hmm. specifically. It's no bytecode. So as far as I remember, I think Micronaut is currently having this feature as well that they can generate the Java sources, but we don't have any bytecode manipulation whatsoever there in the whole process, nowhere. So we do that. And I think, yes, it's very similar to what Micronaut does, but yeah.
That's great, because what I usually said always is that Helidon is very fast, but is completely different to Micronaut and Quarkus. This was my tagline, but it's mm-hmm. no more true, right? So you're performing similar optimizations to Quarkus or Micronaut?
I wouldn't say that it's not true anymore. We still try to do stuff a little bit differently. exactly like this, right, where we are not using any bytecode manipulation. As I mentioned, these sources, these generated sources from the annotations, are just regular Java sources, which you can take, which you can edit if you want to in some way. And one of the great things which I really like about this is how easy actually it is to debug the whole process. Because since there is, as we all always trying to say, there is no magic, right? It's just the regular Java sources with no reflection or bytecode manipulation whatsoever. And you can just take it, you can place the breakpoint there, and it will get resolved. You will see the whole process, you will see the whole chain, you have everything in front of you. And that's one of the great strengths, I believe, our approach has in this regard.
But Micronaut would be similar, right? Because if they generate, you know, the bytecode at build time...
The bytecode, yes. But it would require you to decompile it, right? Or
The main difference between Helidon and Micronaut is Micronaut generates bytecode which is not visible to the developers, and you are generating source code.
Yeah, exactly. That's the difference, which is compiled. Yeah.
So it means there's no magic, because what you see is the entire source code is compiled, and there is no bytecode without source code, right? This is the difference.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, I know that Helidon ships with libraries, but despite the libraries, so if we declarative Helidon, if we fire up the annotation processor, we get source code, which looks nice. I take ownership of the source code. It could be generated by LLM, but it is generated by compiler. It doesn't matter. And therefore, there is no magic, right? This is the main difference.
Yes. Yeah,
cool.
We are trying to completely avoid any bytecode manipulation, and we always generate the Java sources without any black magic, as I like to call it.
Yeah, white magic is cool, but black could be sometimes problematic, yeah.
exactly.
Voodoo magic. Cool. So now... your JSON, I cannot even imagine how it works, because JSON is flexible. So what is starting point, a Java class or a JSON schema?
Right. Well, for us, it's since I used to work at the start of my career in Oracle, I used to work on the JSONB. And I was heavily influenced by the overall design, and I kind of like it.
What's the state of JSONB? Is it still the implementation? Is someone working on it, on the implementations, or you know it?
Well, in terms of you mean my involvement there,
or what's the overall landscape, because there's a MicroProf still using JSONB, and there are, I know there's Eclipse implementation, and there was a Glassfish one, I think. The question is there something else? So is there a Helidon JSONB?
No. Helidon is not JSONB implementation. We avoided that. Originally, I wanted to do that this way, that we would implement the JSONB API, because why not, right? Then I dropped the idea, because the deserializers and serializers are actually using... they are having a reflection bound to it. I think they are having...
JSONP, or...
Well, not necessarily JSONP. I mean, I could create an implementation of the JSONP itself as well, but... if I remember correctly, there was a problem that it's having like fields and methods from reflection bound to it, and that's something we wanted to completely avoid, because we don't need these stuff. We don't need this overhead, and that's the reason why we didn't follow this path actually. Mm-hmm. And it's the way that it wired the JSONP there. We were not exactly thrilled about that, and when I was trying the API to make my own implementation, that's how I actually started. That I created an implementation of the JSONP API. There were some performance problems I was having, so I was thinking, hey, how about I'll try it without that API? How about I'll just design the API myself for my needs? And we'll see how the performance is going without it. And I was able to get multiple of times the performance just because I didn't use the API.
I'm so, asking yeah. because with JSON is the last battle almost for me, because in the recent years I used, so I would say 5 years ago, I used JSONB all the time. And then in some projects, I noticed that because of flexibility, I didn't want it to have a single class to JSON. So I was happier with HashMap-like approach. So almost all my recent projects are JSONP, you know, the P, like HashMap-like. Okay. So, and and then what I did, I started a criminal project almost because I needed JSON for configuration purposes outside MicroProfile, just Java SE, for instance. Right now I have, for instance, an agent, and I use it a lot. I implement it by myself with no external dependencies, and it just needs a little bit of JSON. And what I did is I used, you know, ORCJSON, the reference implementation for the very old reference implementation, which there is an implementation for JavaScript and for Java. They're identical.
Yeah, I think I do. At least the name of the stuff rings a bell.
Yeah, I think that the name of the project is just ORCJSON.
Yeah.
And the interesting part, not that interesting part, is very old, and the API is, it's okay, but is somehow, I mean, it is similar to JSONB, but it is like you start with an object and then say add and whatever. So it's a little bit strange. And what I did is I forked that. This is what is criminal, because I don't like such actions, but it worked well. And this ORCJSON was this 20 classes, but they have property support and bean support, whatever. I deleted everything, and I only kept 3 classes. So with just 3 classes, I have now JSON API, which is related to the JSON. And I would like to have 1 class maybe, or 2, or Java records, and I use it just, you know, for Java CLI, for something outside Helidon, Quarkus, MicroProfile, whatever. And in the Quarkus and MicroProfile, I use usually JSONP. And especially with LLMs, if they generate, you know, the get and put, it is visible for me. I don't have to write it. I can review this and write the tests. So this is why I am asking. This is why it made me curious, because is your API more like JSONP processing or B like binding? What is it?
API. I designed both.
Cool.
But I mean, yes, my API, not the JSONB MP. I designed both for that, and we kept it separated, because in many cases we also need to use just the JSONP-like APIs, just to have some dynamic object, right, which you can create and then convert it to JSON, and that's it. We are using it quite a lot, and but also having the layer of being able to basically easily convert some JSON to some more complex object, let's say, we also need that, right? And our users as well. So that's the reason why we basically did both. And as mentioned at the beginning, or not at the beginning, but since I was influenced by the JSONB, I was trying to design it very similarly. So basically the overall design is that you have one instance, it's surprisingly called JSON binding, and this JSON binding allows you to serialize or deserialize objects. It's pretty much everything it does have, no other methods are involved there, and this implementation will choose the correct deserializer or serializer for your purpose based on the class you provide or the instance you provide if you want to serialize it, right? So that way it can determine what you need. And that's pretty much the whole logic there. And that's just the binding part. And then we are having this JSONP-like APIs, meaning there is a JSON parser, there is a JSON generator, and the dynamic object, and you can use those directly or as a part of the JSON binding. So you can use that as well. We also do have features like that if you have this dynamic object, you can easily just call deserialize s or something like that, and you can pass the JSON this dynamic object of ours and specify the class you want to deserialize it into, and it will automatically convert it for you, so you don't need to go over the JSON again and then deserialize that to some specific structure you desire. You can use that directly, so it's there is an integration between these two projects even on this level, because this is something we felt it's something someone might use because it's useful.
But is it the Helidon media JSONP? It is not that, right? So if you Helidon media JSONP, this is the Maven coordinates. Oh, it starts with JSONP support. This is not this, right?
No. JSONP. This is our support for HTTP media for JSONP itself. That's for the Jakarta version of the mm-hmm. APIs, right? But if you would be searching for the HTTP media support for that, that's dash JSON only, and for the JSON binding, it's dash JSON binding. the media supports for HTTP.
I think mm-hmm. so. There are two Helidons, and we are talking about the Java SE one, right?
Yeah.
So, and because we are talking about Java SE one, you don't have to implement JSONB and JSONP. So this is the first clarification, no. Right? But you could build a bridge and making JSONB compatible, right?
Well, or wouldn't be. Well, you could.
Because I'm thinking, you know, it'd be really cool to have a JSONB API which is based on your and uses reflection. It is slower. I know, yeah, it has to be mm-hmm. high speed and not using reflection, and dropping an API mm-hmm. is a valid reason for Java SE, because Java SE doesn't care about JSONB or JSONP, right? But mm-hmm. we could provide a bridge, right?
Yeah, well,
or at least
use
some.
I do believe that there could be a bridge included if there would be such a need from our users, or users that potentially could that themselves. It shouldn't be that hard, but yes, I think it's totally doable. It's just about doing a wrapper around our way of doing things, and then just mm-hmm. pass it to JSONB, and it would work.
So support from users mm-hmm. will never come, I guess, because if your users get Helidon package, they will use whatever inside.
Yeah.
And I tell you a story. Way back, we used WebLogic server, and it came out of the box, I remember till now, with I think was file support, whatever, that we can use a connector to access local files, which sounds strange, but in cluster could make sense. And they dropped, or they changed it to and it was no more compatible. And they say, well, this was our implementation, was bound to the server version, and this is normal. And what my client said is, we are not allowed anymore to use any proprietary features. Now we only use public APIs, and we never will use anything WebLogic specific. I remember distinctly. So I think it might be a good idea to have an optional bridge and say, look, this is you don't have all the features. Maybe it's slower, but you know, this is an API which never changed.
Yeah.
Also, the next very important thing is, in all my projects, is the question, how well LLM supports that. And what I see is that the MicroProfile Jakarta Java SE API supporting LLMs is great. They never hallucinate. So if you had a JSONB bridge, I will ground my LLM. You are only allowed to generate JSONB code, and Helidon could be pluggable. So I think the demand is there, but this is, no, Apple, I think, will never hear from the clients that they would like to have a different CPU inside, or maybe the RAM is not nice enough. Maybe they will get someone from the, you know, from the service providers who care about the iPhones or whatever, or the telecommunication companies, but not from the end users. And I think it would be the same story, because Java SE is Java SE. You can do whatever you like, but I think we should push the standards forward, because I know that APIs are hugely beneficial in LLM-driven development, and actually all my projects are more standard-based than ever. So they use Jakarta E MicroProfile all the time because LLMs know it that well. And with LLMs, you can even skip more dependencies because, you know, you can say, hey, LLM, generate the glue code, and LLM will do. You don't have, you know, to get Jakarta Commons lang to check whether string is empty, for instance, right? So they generate two methods and I'm done. So this would be my justification that you get a little bit more time. Is Dimitri still there?
Helidon? Oh, yeah. Dimitri is still the manager.
Because he designed the JSONB, so he should actually tell you, hey, where is JSONB? I'm a little bit disappointed with Dimitri, I have to say. I have to invite him back to the podcast, because if he designed not only the specification, he also designed the logo for the specification, yeah, right? For mm-hmm. the implementation, you know, the JSONB,
yeah,
the JSON mm-hmm. binder.
Yeah.
He should be after. And we should be careful, because this is what I tell you, my project was criminal because I just forked that for my reasons is great, but I would like to have an API actually, right?
Yeah. Well, frankly, this is something we were already thinking about, not just for the mm-hmm. JSONB mm-hmm. API itself, mm-hmm. but also for mm-hmm. For other frameworks such as JSON and stuff, that we would at least support the annotations in some way and pretty much do some bridge around it if it comes to that. But frankly, it's something we didn't do yet. But
motivation, maybe, you know.
The thought, it was there already.
Yeah. And I think for Java, the huge advantage is our ecosystem and the amount. So what I do on conferences, though, or my clients, they ask me, "No, do we still need Java? And do LLMs understand Java?" And LLMs are very, very good in the quality of Java code generation itself. But if you create a few rules and say you are only allowed to use, you know, MicroProfile and Jakarta E, magic happens because you know. All our specs are written in very normative way, so they are very strict, and they were always open, and they know it by heart. So I would say this is huge competitive advantage over other languages or platform, what we have with the APIs. And if you would, for instance, right, you have your first binding implementation that is bound to Helidon 4.4, let's say, then Helidon 5 comes out, and you change something, you get hallucinations. But if you would have JSONB, there will be never hallucinations. You know, the only hallucination can be that the wrong version from Helidon is picked.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. This
would be the motivation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Makes sense, to be fair. But as mentioned, right now, there is nothing like that in development.
No, but in the queue after the podcast is published, hopefully. is nothing against, you know, to change the JSONB a little bit, right? I don't know how the process is working, but I think they will be open if you say, you know, the reflection is problematic here. I would like to change it. I don't think there will be lots of friction.
I don't know, to be fair. I mean, it would be a pretty significant change there, and I don't know how others would feel about that. So
I think Dimitri will know because he was I think there's a silent in the JSONB space at least. So we can look it up right now, and what's on the horizon, and at least, you know, propose it or revive it because it comes from a need. It's a part of the core profile, I think.
But yes, it would be nice to be fair. I would be using the JSONB API already for my
purpose. There is a 3.1 under development
mm-hmm.
from Emily Jung, Ed Brett, Dimitri Kornilov. So I think this is like set in stone. He's already there, and from Payara guys, Tombi tribe, that Ivar, I would say there's nothing against. You can at least write an email, right, and say, hey, look, I had a problem and see what happens. This is what I would do at least. And support for Java records, ability to serialize, deserialize UID to JSON. This is clarification JSON number format. So I would say if they provide support for Java records, they were not available before, I think you could do something.
Well, I'm not saying that they wouldn't begin to changing the spec evolve it in some way, like when what I did with the records. Oh, but...
And David Kral on December 17th proposed that.
That was my work, yes. but I don't know how keen they would be into such a major rework of the API, because changing the deserializer and serializer signature basically is a big impactful thing. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to think about this, and if there is a need, maybe we could get JSON B in Java SE. So I already have it. I actually, this is what I use in my system tests. But and what would be the impact? It would be not just the entry point to the serializer, or what is the impact on the API? I'm talking about API.
Yeah, in terms of the API, it's just the method.
The method.
Yeah, the method for the serializer.
But you could add additional methods, right?
Well, you could, and make some defaults if it comes to that. But I really don't know.
So I would say this is, if we will break backward compatibility, is a bigger issue. But mm-hmm. if you add stuff and they say, okay, this is new in, JSON support, whatever, I would say it was a huge selling point. This is one of the reasons why I try to avoid JSON, I have to say. It is almost standard. JSON is hugely popular. But if I have an API, why you should use JSON if there is API, And surprisingly, the JSON P, the old one, was always fast enough. I know that JSON is faster, but I had never any performance problem with JSON P. And this is why all my projects are based right now on JSON P. Because, additional stability and the hope that, right now, we can talk about JSON B, and if you provide the implementation, I get, without changing my code, a better implementation of JSON B, and maybe... Quarkus guys see this and provide some. This is what makes it interesting. Or you can build something in where the Quarkus guys cannot use it, right? So there could be also, right? No license key or whatever. Say, if Quarkus slow, you can say no in the code. If server equals Quarkus sleep 500 milliseconds, they won't notice, and Helidon will be the fastest.
Come All right.
No, but think about the JSON B.
Yeah, I actually like the idea, and as mentioned, we already had it, but I need to raise that probably again. We'll see. We will see what comes up from that. I'm not going to give you any promises in this regard.
But I
still see the benefits for that, and I saw it at the beginning as well. Yeah. We'll see.
And a motivation, maybe I told you this already, is it was a few years back, a Java user meeting. The Richard Fichtner, this is also was on the podcast, he talks about a lot on conferences even. So we had a Java haters, Java user group. So I saw him talking about this, a Java one. And what I met them, Python developers, and they told me they would like to they would like to use Java for operations. It's easier to operate and it's faster, but it's harder to learn. And I say, what do you mean by that? And they say, take a look at Quarkus tutorials. There's five different paths to do the same. And I say, I never read the tutorial. They say, how you learn then? It's like, I read MicroProfile. I mean, there is a JAX-RES. It is just one path. And I pick Quarkus and it works. Or you can pick Helidon or whatever. You are completely independent of the implementation. So I would say this is huge added value, focusing on APIs, because APIs are abstractions. And it's the same here in Helidon, right? If you open Helidon, you have a declarative microprofile, you have multiple paths, and a novice could be confused and say, what's going on? I mean, what to pick? why there is a Java version and a Java version which is called MicroProfile, and both are Java, right? And with the API approach, I think, for me, it was a huge selling point. I ignore first the vendor-specific stuff, focus on the API, implemented the app, and then it then thought about, you know, which configuration options do you have? And I'm really happy. I always was happy with the approach. So I would say from the marketing perspective, because from the implementation perspective, for you, you have to implement a bridge. It's not like it is getting leaner or better. It is just additional abstractions afterwards, right?
Yeah.
But for me, I think what you did is the usual way. You have an idea, you implement something, and then think about how to abstract it. And not like start with the abstraction and hope that you will find an implementation, right? Right?
Yes. Yes, pretty much like that.
Yeah. Very good. So now tell me more. So could I use it is it meant the JSON support for internal use in Helidon, or is it meant to be used by me as a user?
It's definitely intended to be used by you as a user. We are currently migrating our internal projects, or our projects in general. We are having as a part of Helidon, and we are migrating them to be based on the Helidon JSON. So we are currently already running it. But the main idea behind it wasn't just for us internally inside our components, but also for our users to benefit from it. Because the fact that you can have the pretty much overall binding logic generated at the compile time in the Java sources, it's great. I mean, it was exactly what we wanted. It was exactly the design we are trying to follow. And we think our users will benefit from it greatly. So that's why we did it. And definitely, it's not intended only for our internal use.
I found in an article, Serialize and Deserialize JSON with Helidon from December 24th. Interestingly, but it is JSON B.
Yeah, I think so. But
it looks.
Yeah, search for Helidon JSON, or I can send it to you, actually. But there is a Medium.
Yeah, I did it. Helidon JSON, and yeah. Is it JSON support? JSON P is always JSON B. Helidon 4.4 release.
It's on a Medium, and I made it.
From Ali.
Yeah, that's Helidon JSON, and then dash fast JSON without furious runtime code. Oh. That's the Medium article I wrote about it.
So I would try to find your article, but it disappeared. There is no way.
There is no way for you to find it. It's Helidon.
No. So I even found our podcast, JSON, but no article.
It's try to Google the fast JSON without furious runtime code.
Fast JSON with furious.
Without furious JSON. Runtime code. And it should be on Medium. Or I can send you the link if you want to. Actually, why shouldn't I do it? We are having on chat here, so... Okay.
Yeah, put it in the chat. This would be cool.
Yeah. Sending it there.
Huh. Absolutely. So now we can restart the podcast, right? So I will just cut it out, everything. It still records.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where we stopped, actually.
You ask Adam, are you there?
Yeah. I asked that several times because suddenly you fell silent and I was surprised by that.
Yes, I believe you. So we can reboot, right?
Okay.
So after some technical difficulties, I got an article from you with the title, and it is extremely well hidden, Helidon JSON. Fast JSON without furious runtime code from March 27th.
Yes.
And in this article, we see that in order to do the speed magic, we need Helidon dash JSON dash binding. Mm-hmm. And it is indeed similar to JSON B. We have JSON binding dot builder, and we can just serialize a person, for instance. Which is Java record, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. And you need one annotation at json.entity.
Yes. That's the marking annotation for our annotation processor to properly pick up the type and generate some binding around that. I mean, the converter type.
But why you need that? You could say whatever I put to the, you know, to the binder, it is an entity. You could make a default that is serializable, right?
Well, whatever you put into that JSON binding object, it's automatically serializable and deserializable if there is some converter for it. So we support some basic Java types, and you can use those out of the box without needing pretty much doing anything, right? But if you want something more complex, like your own POJOs to be handled and stuff like that, mm-hmm. then you need to place the JSON entity annotation there on the type, and then having our annotation processor on the class part during the compilation, it will pick it up and it will compile everything. So. That's one way, or you can design it yourself if you want to. Make your own converter for that, you can also do that. So you can provide it to us over the annotation or over the builder, as you have mentioned yourself that you can do that over the builder.
Mm-hmm. But why we need it? Because if you think about this, mm-hmm. let's say I created my own Java record developer, mm-hmm. and I pass it to your binder, mm-hmm. so you could just assume. You just use it, and why I need still to put annotation on it?
That's because we need to trigger the annotation processor, and that's at the compilation time. And we basically say, hey, give us all the classes or basically Java types which are annotated with this JSON entity. And that's how we determine for which classes we should generate the converter for. Because otherwise, we would be generating it for everything, pretty much. Or we would have to analyze the code in some way, what types are used there, and stuff like that. And that's obviously something we don't want to do. So that's the reason why we basically came up with this.
I get you if you run on Helidon, mm-hmm. because you have to scan the class path, right? But or similar.
Yeah, exactly.
Or similar. Not scan the, but scan something, yes. right? To find the classes can be Jandex or whatever. But mm-hmm. you know, 20 years ago we would scan class path. So now, your API looks like this: JSON binding. Dot create, I have the binding. Mm-hmm. And then I say binding dot serialize, mm-hmm. and I pass the record.
Yes.
So you know that I pass the record to the serializer. In this particular case, mm-hmm. from my perspective, the annotation is optional, is not needed.
That's what you mean. Yeah, absolutely. It's optional in this
very
regard.
Good.
I thought that you are talking about how this will then be processed, because since if we wouldn't be having the JSON annotation there, we wouldn't generate the converter for you. So we would have to provide.
I just assumed you love annotations. You would like, you know, to annotate whatever you can. It's like, no, this cannot be, right?
No.
Give me your annotation, right?
No, this is the annotation is there just for our annotation processor to properly pick it up. But during the runtime, if you provide the converter for it yourself, it will absolutely work. So.
Why I have to provide the converter? Because in Java record, you could have your own Java record converter, and you can just, you know, search for the components. Mm-hmm. And if you're a string component, you have your own converter, yeah, right?
But then you are getting into the place where you pretty much have to use reflection, because you need to go through the fields, methods invocations, and stuff like that. What we do during the compilation time is that we do pretty much all of this. We will go through the mm-hmm. record. We will determine the getter methods. We will check what's there, which constructor to use, and stuff like that. And then we generate a code which deserializes or serializes this object based on this information we found in the record. So that's what we are doing there. And when I'm saying that you need to provide your own converter or what we are doing, it doesn't mean that we are not reusing some already existing ones. Like, for example, for a string, you are not required to invent your own serialization mechanism for string, for example, right?
No, but for my developer record.
For your developer record, you can just delegate this to string converter. There are mechanisms for that. So you will be just required to say, hey, I am having these fields there, or the how it's called for records, it's record component or something like that. And
component, yeah, and record component is like,
yeah, mm-hmm. And you will just take the type of this component and search for the already registered converter for the given type, and you will just delegate the overall process for it.
Yeah, I just copied two examples from your article. So the first one is the person, yes, with adjacent entity.
Yes.
And this is what I'm talking about. So for me, this adjacent entity might not be required because I'm passing this to binding serialize.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I begin to understand you need this adjacent entity to generate the source code,
exactly,
at build, yes, time, because it is too late. Then if in runtime I pass the person to serialize, you cannot generate the infrastructure anymore.
Exactly.
This is the problem.
Yeah, this is exactly the problem. And we are trying to avoid any bytecode manipulation whatsoever. So because of that, we can't do pretty much what we are doing at the compilation time. And since we are also not using any reflection, we are basically having no way how to then properly handle it.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm doing in my projects is I have BC, boundary control entity, mm-hmm, an old patent from Ivar Jacobsen, 1992, older than Java, also well known by LLMs, so which is cool. And my JPA entities, data objects, Java records are in entity package, usually. Mm-hmm. Not usually, always. Or in boundary package. What I could do, I could annotate a package info.
Oh, I see.
And then all the records in my package would be automatically processed. This would be cool.
Oh, this is actually, I like it. This is a good approach, which could be very useful for that, and you wouldn't have to modify your classes at all. You would just annotate the package.
And for LLMs, they will go there, see package info. Why? Great. You know, an annotation, then all the records. And we could have the annotation with list of records if I need some adjustment. But it, by default, would be say whatever's in the package, it usually is JSON serializable. I would say in some of my project it is the case. In more complicated project, maybe not. But then I wouldn't put the annotation on the package info. I would put on the classes. This would be more convention, you know?
Yeah, and really, I really like it. I made a note here to take
very
a look
good
into this because this is a great. I didn't thought about it actually.
This is PDD. Yeah. This is podcast driven development.
Ah, nice. We have to do it more often.
Yeah. So then we get JSONB API on JSONP, you know. This is okay, now I get it. And this is really very similar to JSONB.
Yeah.
But what you should do is you should use, you know, vars and multi-line strings in the example.
I think I'm
it would look nice. This is compact, but you know, we get angry JavaScript developers. This is a crap Java, and it could look nicer, right? So this is
right. Good point. I can definitely use that. That's fine.
Pretty cool. Do I have to use Helidon, or I can just use this without Helidon?
Well, you can use this without Helidon. It's completely standalone.
And if it will generate the source code, will it be self-contained or I still need external libraries?
Well, the generated code is then is discovered via the service registry. So you don't have to. You need service registry for that, but it's automatically opt-in for you as a dependency of this project. So you don't have to specifically add anything yourself. If you are asking about this.
Because what would be cool So like eject, you know, that I can generate the Java source code and then I don't need anything. Because what I do right now is, it is actually, it started more, so I do the shorts on YouTube. Mm-hmm. There are already the 1,200 of them. And Java 25 came with the simplified main and with the sharebank, so where you can run Java 25 from in source code mode. And I began, I don't know when the first scripts, as the sharebank support was isn't older than Java 25, so I started in earlier with it. But with the simplified main, this void main instance and so forth, what happened in my case, all my shell scripts are converted to Java now. So in my commercial projects, I'm converting, because sometimes they are old Python scripts, and I had to extend them. And before I extend them, I converted them to Java. And in all cases, Java was shorter than Python. I even posted from time to time on if there's not that critical on LinkedIn. And I was stunned because I assumed, you know, Python is more compact, easier, whatever. And then how can it be that Java 25 is shorter than Python? And for that purpose, it is really cool to have self-contained code, you know, because I don't need external libraries. I have one script, even if it's longer one, I don't care. And I can run it. It is executable and I'm done. This is, you can debug and so forth. So maybe there is something in there. You know, even for your clients, you can say, look, we can have, you know, the entire, or not the entire, a parts of it just as Java source, which should run just with Java or Java C. Especially, this is also the case why I picked the org JSON, because there are no external dependencies. I have three classes. I can parse JSON and serialize JSON, and without even compiling. I just say Java, and it just compiles in memory and does that, you know, which is huge. Super cool. Yeah, this is actually a great project. And the question is now, how fast is it? If you compare it to Jackson, for instance, do you have some performance, rough performance?
We did some performance measurements. I just want to note that we were trying to use some dedicated machine which was designed for it was tuned for the performance measurements, but it's by no means any certificate machine for that. So just keep that in mind. But
so it was not run on a dedicated JSON CPU, right?
No. Don't feel like
this
that.
Was a
but not
a JSON ASIC. This would be cool, you know, a JSON ASIC.
No. That would be, yeah.
Yeah.
But the numbers we got are pretty much consistent on every environment we are running this on. And I don't mean the numbers themselves, but the order of the frameworks, how they are scoring in terms of, for example, the percentage-wise and stuff like that. We were having multiple times pretty much the same results with the different numbers, but the scoring was percentage-wise mm-hmm. Very similar all the time. So that's why we went with it. And we did some JMH benchmarks, and in comparison to Jackson,
you are not allowed to reveal numbers.
I am. Right? We are actually having it in the article down there.
Very good. So because I thought you will never tell me the number.
I do, but I was trying to get into that and do some disclaimer before. So in terms of the Jackson, and if we think about the use case as a simple POJO with some string values, some primitive type values.
Wow. And this is the diagram, right? Operation per millisecond.
Yes,
this is
exactly. Diagram in the, and some one inner object. Then the performance was 400 times better, 400%. Bigger performance than what Jackson has in terms of the serialization,
which is crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty good, I think. So
Micronaut is a little bit better.
Yes.
And Yason, unfortunately, what I'm using, is the worst one.
Yeah, Yason.
But I will cut it out because my clients won't hear this. But it is like I don't know how many, maybe 800 operations per second you can do with JSON, and Helidon does 12,000.
Yes, yes, exactly. So the JSON had, I think, how much was it in this? Yeah, it was 1,800 operations per millisecond.
Oh, really? Because on the graphic, it is less than.
No, it's just not that apparent from the graph, because there is no 1,000 line there. Oh,
okay.
It's actually,
but it should be a half of 2,000, I would say, right?
This is a strange graph. I have to take a look into this, but as you said, this looks very looks even slower than what the measurements were. I need to fix that. I don't want to. I don't want this to.
Yeah, make it a little bit higher, my photos will look a little bit better, you know.
But if you check the numbers above it, basically the JSON is having 1,080 operations per millisecond. And Jackson has 2,300 operations per millisecond, and our implementation has nearly 12,000 operations.
But this is interesting. What it means is this is why JSON or JSONP was always good enough for me, because there was not a lot difference to Jackson. I assume, you know, that the JSONP was actually way worse, but it is not. And if you don't serialize a lot, so what we do, you know, we do a lot of stuff and then we return from JAX-RS a JSON object, so this you won't notice, because there is a, you know, the relation between the response and the work inside the methods. It's not like everything is JSON inside, we just emit JSON at the end. And whether it takes 1 millisecond or 1.5 millisecond, no one cares, right? So this is, but in your case, it is like if you have to do, you know, a high-performance JSON, now is the value proposition. Pick JSON, which is standard, and you get 1,300 transactions per second. Or we change the API a little bit, and we get 12,000. You know, there's a huge difference. So I would say it is, and it is not if speed means money. So in the cloud, if you do have lots of JSON, you could immediately get cost savings. And of course, the next thing, energy savings. Because the parser stuff is CPU-intensive. If it is 12 times faster, it means we save a lot of energy.
Yeah, I mean, it was. There were some talks about exactly these stuff before. Yeah.
This is great work. So it means you need more leisure to do more pet projects, right?
I'm actually working on some new stuff, but that's not. That's
ah,
not
okay. Of course, you cannot tell me this. So if I ask you, so, no, I cannot tell you this. And then I get, you know, an email in the Fortnite action and say, hey, look, we can talk about this now.
Exactly. So, hey, okay, look, cool. I have a new thing. Do you want to talk about it? Exactly. This is how it will
But even if it's released, it is impossible to find the article. So as a service to our listeners, we'll put it to the show notes. But you can Google all the time. You will never find it. So
strange.
I don't know what you did.
That's strange. I need to.
I looked for David Kral and Jason, and I found your LinkedIn profile. This was more relevant than the article, you know.
Nice. I need to propagate it more then, as it seems.
Yeah, we did it now, and of course. So, but this is the JSONP, the JSONB, and how JSONP looks like.
The JSONP, we are not propagating it that much, because I think that the most of the users will be using actually.
Not that much. You cannot propagate it less than this. This is already complete secret, you know, article.
I mean, we don't write about it that much. For example, in our documentation, it's below the JSON binding, because we think that the most of the users will use the JSON binding more than the JSONP equivalent. But if you want to use the JSONP equivalent, you can approach it via creating the JSON parser. There is a JSON parser class, the interface, and it's having some methods which will give you back the corresponding parser you need, or the JSON generator. Those are the basically two main entry points which you need to use for you to be able to start with it.
But the JSONP, is it hashmap-like?
It's not a hash map, like that it would be an implementation of a hash map, but right now it's using...
hash map-like, you know, like the JSONP is more or less hash map-like, I would say.
Yeah, but it does have a hash map inside, so it uses a lot of methods which could be similar to that. It's like that.
Because the hash map-like implementation has appealing in projects where you have, for instance, supporting multiple versions at the same time of the same API, for instance, right? And if the API evolves, let's imagine we have developer now with programming language name and then programming language experience, and then we get version 2 with LLM experience. So we have three fields. So the newer API is more flexible with the hash map, because if you do JSONB, you have to make the difference. Is this a valid attribute in this version, or is this attribute null, not null, you know, or cannot be null in this version or may not exist in this version? And with JSONP, it's just, you know, whatever it comes, and I implement my own validator and I'm done. So it is not like, and of course, default is JSONB, but what I find myself that currently lots of my project are that complicated or complex, that we just start with JSONP.
Right. Yeah, I think if you are familiar with the JSONP way, it's very similar in this regard as well.
Super cool.
But we try to avoid using those, how it's called. I don't recall for top of my head right now, but I think it's JSON factories and stuff like that. So we avoided those completely, and we are directly instantiating the right parser and generator you currently need.
You mean this JSON.createJSON object? This is what you mean, right? JSON.createJSON object.
Oh, that. No. I mean, sometimes when you needed to do some, when you needed to create a parser, for example, you needed a factory for
JSON. Writer, JSON
writer, stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This. Okay.
So we avoided that, and we are basically having there two main entry points, and that's the JSON parser and JSON generator. Those are low-level components which will allow you to generate the JSON or parse it, and then you can just use it to visualize, for example.
Having said that, the JSONB is a little bit different to JSONP, but the what I appreciate is the entry point is always cool. If you have JSON and say dot, and you get from the IDE, you know, all the possibilities, it's easier, the discoverability is better than, you know, knowing in advance new parser whatever. So from the developer experience, maybe an interface which just points to all this is
what you just said, this is exactly something we were talking about during the Monday with my colleague, because we want to...
Yeah, I listened to your meeting.
I'm having the same feeling right now. But we were discussing exactly that, that we are missing that, and we want to add it, that we want to have one centralized point, because the JSON binding is very easy to use because of that, because there is one point which you need to remember, and then you have everything, and you can decide what you want to do. With the JSON, the parser or the processing we are having, it's a bit different, because then you need to remember two classes or interfaces in this case, and then you can work with it. There is not one single central point which you could use. And I absolutely agree with that. And this is something we will be enhancing in the next version, because we want to introduce this centralized point for that. That's an absolutely valid point. So, yeah.
Super cool. Is anything we missed?
I'm thinking about... No, I don't think so. I think we covered the what it generates, how it generates, and I think it's a nice thing to mention that basically when you have those generated converters created, you don't have to register them yourself anywhere or anything like that. Basically, you will let us generate it.
But and it back to the converters.
Yeah,
if I just do my developer. Uh-huh. And I put the annotation or the package info, let's say, later or now on the class. Mm-hmm. And the Java record comprises string, integer, float, just basic data types.
Right.
I don't need any converters in this case, right?
You do need a converter for that given record, because you need to know how to handle the record itself, because you need to handle each of the components of it.
Components.
Yeah. You need to handle it separately. You need to handle it as a string. You need to write it. You need to write this as an end.
But again, I already annotated with JSON entity the person. If I annotate it, you can generate the infrastructure.
Yes.
And in your article, we have a JSON entity and the person. So what I will do is lowercase person, create a person object, and string name is string component and H. And I need reflection at build time. And with the reflection at build time, I could generate the infrastructure for runtime, right? And I could have defaults. I would understand that I need converter if I need, you know, very specific JSON format. But I already see the person. Person is lowercase p, then name and H as a JSON fields.
You don't need to do anything. I mean, if you annotate this, that's it.
Yeah.
You don't need to do anything about that. I thought that you are basically reasoning whether we do need to even have this generated converter. That's what I thought you are basically asking about.
No, the generated converter we need for sure.
Yeah, but
so we already talked about the annotation.
Yeah.
Okay, so you will generate the converter for me.
Exactly.
And because let's say I would like to have the name of the person in JSON must not be name rather than first name. Then can I specify something in the annotation, you know, similar to JSONB, like name is...
Yeah, absolutely. As mentioned, I was trying to do it very close to JSONB in terms of available annotations, what it can do and can't do. And so I took pretty much the very similar design. And to be fair, I think it's worth mentioning that all of our annotations are centralized in the JSON class. So if you, so because of that, you don't have to remember all the annotations, or you don't have to read the documentation.
JSON dot is pretty cool. At JSON dot.
At JSON dot, and you will get the complete list of all the available annotations, and you will just choose the right one for you. So that's a very cool feature, and there you will see that there are, for example, JSON property, which is pretty much the same thing as, how was that, JSONB property, I think it was called. And it's pretty much the same thing. And you will specify your custom name, and this custom name gets resolved at the compilation time as well. And the converter gets generated with this custom name directly. So there is absolutely no resolving whatsoever during the compilation. During the runtime. And that's super cool. I think that we can analyze basically everything at the compilation time, and we will generate the converter, which is exactly how you need it, which contains everything you would like us to do, any customizations, and we will use it directly. You can even specify your own serializers there, and we will handle their instantiating, and we will use those rather some built-in ones or those which are registered at the runtime, for example. So, yeah.
But is there any reason for me that I would ever have to create a converter by hand? No.
For example, if you couldn't... right now, I'm just trying to think some reason for that.
Maybe JPEG, right? If I would like to serialize JPEG or PNG with some strange stuff, maybe then,
yeah,
right?
If you would like to do something which is not standard, and there would be no support for
that. This is okay.
Definitely,
okay.
You would then have to do it yourself.
But this is an exception.
Yeah, pretty much so. Or if it would be about a class which you can't change, you can't add the annotation there. Right now, at this point, we are not able to generate a converter for you. We are currently working on some design, some API for that as well. So you could provide us over some annotation, for example, the class you want us to generate the converter for, even though when you are not having access to this class itself, like some third-party class, and you want to just you want us to handle it. So
okay,
yeah.
So from the user perspective, it is like JSONB, but in order to avoid reflection and provide high-speed serialization, deserialization in the background, you convert the, you generate the converters, but they, no one cares about them. So you will see them, you can debug them, so there's no magic, no black magic, because the source code is source code, this is high-performance source code, and it is based on the technology we talked about earlier with the service registry. So we already covered, you know, the source code generation and stuff like that. So in our earlier episode, pretty cool. So will you attend the Geekon conference?
You mean in Krakow?
Yes.
I don't think so. If I'm not accepted, and I didn't check whether my talk was accepted there, then probably not, unfortunately.
Okay, but if the my YouTube audience will find a short with you, right? So it's a who are you and what are you doing here? This is my conference shorts. If they won't see this, means your talk was not accepted. If they find you on YouTube with Geekon banner, then you are accepted.
Yeah, I will exactly. Be Geekon, so if I, it's very so, much fun.
I will be there, so we can we'll have a short coffee and yeah.
Yeah, it would be.
It was a pleasure.
Yep, it was as always.
Where people can find you on social media? So you are Verdant, right?
Yes. Still. I'm on social media. I think Twitter. If anyone would be interested in talking with me, just ping me there. We can talk. I'll happily help you with this stuff, so we can talk about it. Or I think Blue Sky, but I'm not that much there anymore. And actually, now I realize that Twitter is not Twitter anymore, but X. But my head exactly. Is still didn't accept it. So, but I'm on X, and I'm checking it pretty regularly there. Or LinkedIn, if you find me there, feel free to ping me there as well.
And there's a one comment to your article, and the comment is that whether you have an object pooling.
Yes.
And
we were talking about
the question is why someone asked why someone would be interested in object pooling if we're already four times faster than Jackson. Or what's the background of that?
Yeah, I think that basically background for that is that we wouldn't have to create a new arrays, for example, for serializers and stuff like that every single time when we are using that. But and we could just reuse that, and we could avoid basically new instances. This is I like this idea, but we are struggling with it a bit because we are designing it to be virtual threads friendly. So we can't use, for example, some thread locals and structures like that. Mm-hmm. So we would have to use some blocking mechanism.
Scope values.
I'm not sure whether scope values are suitable for that.
I mean, if it's request bound, if it is pulling within a request, would be pulling within a thread, this would work. But if you would like to pull between threads,
yeah, exactly,
then we need a different stuff, exactly. Right?
And so I was trying to basically this person is suggesting us to have some support for that, and he even reached out to us and proposed some solution. We are currently in the middle of investigation whether it's something worth and whether we can use it. But from my initial tests which I have done on this, actually the creation of the new array was faster than using the pool. So I don't know.
Why I'm asking. So what's the background? Because if you perform the tests and they are already very, very fast, the assumption would be with pooling, it would be even faster, a lot faster.
Yes.
And this is the question, right? So this is what I asked. Okay. But we will cover this and after you shipped your next pet project, right? And you are always invited back. Always fun to talk with you.
Yeah, it's good.
And think about the JSONB and JSONP support. And thank you a lot.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me back. And as you said, it's always fun. I really like it. I really enjoy it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.